The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2011 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2011. If you have purchased this audio CD, you are free to make multiple copies of it for your own or your school's use. You may not sell copies of this audio or post it on the Internet. If you would like to find out more about the work of ACCS, please visit our website at www.accsedu.org. To order additional talks from this conference, please visit the ACCS website and click on Conferences. Thank you for your support of ACCS.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for this honor, letting me come up and talk to you guys. I'm going to be talking today about the Christian response to government injustice. A man stole a loaf of bread and was sentenced to 19 years in prison. That one loaf of bread cost a man his youth, his family, his friends, almost everything. But when he got out of prison 19 years later, he had a whole new outlook on life, because he saw that he was living under an unjust government, a government that would force him to trade 19 years for a loaf of bread. And so he decided to devote his life, his words and his actions, to trying to speak out against this unjust government. This man is Jean Valjean, the main character in Victor Hugo's novel Les Misérables. Now, Jean Valjean represents justice. He's a man who throughout his life has to make hard decisions. Sometimes he chooses to break the law. He's chased by a man named Javert, the prison warden, and a man who seems to follow the law to the letter. As Christians, can we say that a man is just and at the same time can break the law? After all, in Romans 13, 1 through 2, it does say, "Let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established." So God puts governments on this earth to create order, and we have to follow what the government says. But what do you do when the government isn't following God's commandment? That is injustice, a direct contradiction of God's commandment. And I say that as Christians, we can't just stand by and let injustice continue. Throughout the Bible, you see that people react to injustice. For example, in the book of Acts, when the apostles were preaching the gospel, the Pharisees decided that they were going to make it a law that the gospel couldn't be preached anymore. Well, the apostles didn't just stop preaching. In fact, before the law was made, they came to the Pharisees and they said, "Which is right in God's eyes, to listen to you or to him? You can be the judges of that, but we can't stop speaking about what we've seen and what we've heard." They said this because Jesus had commanded them to preach the gospel to all nations. Had they followed this law, they would have been contradicting their beliefs. And throughout the Bible, you see that there are different ways people respond to injustice. There's individual protest, when an individual realizes and decides that they can no longer just let the injustice continue. There is civil resistance, in which a mass of people join together and all decide to argue against the same injustice through peaceful protest. And then there's also physical intervention, in which a person decides to physically intervene in the situation to try and stop the injustice. Now, I'm not saying that as Christians we should just disobey the government on a whim, that we have any right more than anybody else to just stop listening to laws. But what I am saying is that if there is injustice in the government, something that directly contradicts our Christian beliefs, we cannot let it continue, and we have to respond proportionately, whether that be individual protest, civil resistance, or physical intervention. So let me just explain these different levels for you. Before he did anything to speak out or anything like that, Jean Valjean felt hopeless, because he was living under an unjust government. And until he realized his voice and his ability to speak out against the government, well, he didn't feel like he had any power. And this is the first step, individual protest, the realization that you can say something, you have a voice, and you can use it. I believe that Henry David Thoreau somewhat explains this in his essay Civil Disobedience when he asks the question, must the citizen ever for a moment or in the least degree resign his conscience to a legislator? Why has every man a conscience then? Well, there's a lot of things you can get away from this quote, but what I want us to look at is the importance of a man's conscience, or for Christians, knowing the difference between what is right and what is wrong in God's eyes. As Christians, if we know what is right in God's eyes, and a man, however powerful he may be, is telling us to do something that is directly contradicting what God tells us is good and true, well, how can we listen to that man? In the book of Daniel, you probably know this story, King Nebuchadnezzar created an idol. He told everybody that they had to bow down to it at a certain time or they'd be killed. Well, when the time came for everybody to bow down to the idol, three people remained standing. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were three Jewish princes that said they could not bow down to this idol. As we all know, God says, you will have no other idols before me. So, King Nebuchadnezzar didn't really care. He threw them into a furnace. He was angry that they would break his law. But imagine his surprise when he opened the furnace up and saw the three princes perfectly healthy. What happened here? God directly intervened in the situation and saved the three princes. Because even though they were breaking Nebuchadnezzar's law, they were still following his higher commandment. And this is an example of Christian protest, standing by your beliefs even when the most powerful king, Nebuchadnezzar, tells you you can't. But I do have to point out, had the three princes not been directly saved by God, well, they would have been burnt to a crisp, and we wouldn't remember the story the same way that we do today. That's why there's a second level, civil resistance, when you need more than just three people to prove your point. One of the best examples of a person that uses civil resistance is Mohandas Gandhi. Now, Gandhi argued against British imperialism. He believed that India needed to be its own nation. And so what he did is he gathered people from all over India and led them in strikes, sit-ins, protests, and other forms of protest marches to try and prove to the government that he had a group, a whole nation of conscientious citizens that knew that they didn't have all the rights that they deserved and that they wanted these rights. They were willing to stand up and even break the law in order to get them. He developed a form of thinking called Satyagraha, which is a combination of two words. The first is Satya, which means truth, and the second is Agraha, which means force. He called it his civil resistance. And he was successful because in 1947, British Parliament made India its own nation. But Gandhi's actions don't just stop there. Because in 1959, a Baptist minister visited India. He was profoundly affected by what he saw as Gandhi's success. And he came back to America to combine Christian doctrine, Gandhi's teachings, to lead the civil rights movement. We all know him as Martin Luther King Jr. He believed that Gandhi's ideas for protesting would work in fighting American segregation because certain people, black people, were not allowed the same rights as other American citizens. And he did not view this as something that was just unconstitutional. Martin Luther King Jr. believed that this was actually not biblical either. In his letter from Birmingham Jail, Martin Luther King Jr. distinguishes the difference between breaking a just law and breaking an unjust law. He says, a just law is a man-made code that squares with the moral law or the law of God, while an unjust law is a law that is out of harmony with that moral law. And he further explains that breaking an unjust law does not mean that a person can walk away from the punishment. And he mentions Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were willing to stand by their beliefs even to the point of being thrown into a furnace, even to the point of death. And he was thrown into prison for his beliefs. But Martin Luther King Jr. says that you have to stand by your beliefs even if you're going to be punished for it, even if you're going to be thrown into a furnace. Martin Luther King Jr. was successful. The Civil Rights Act was created in 1964, and he felt that this was a great success for him. Both Gandhi and Dr. King were successful in their resistance because they responded proportionately to what they were dealing with. Now, they were dealing with a loss of rights. Their citizens felt that they did not have the rights that they deserved. And so they responded by showing that they had a group of conscientious citizens that all knew about these rights, knew that they needed and wanted these rights. They were willing to stand up and say that. But what if more than just rights are on the line? What if it's a human life? How does a Christian respond then? Well, sometimes, if a Christian's pushed to their last resort, they can't just be peaceful. Physical intervention is a last resort. The best example of a Christian that used or attempted physical intervention in a bad situation is Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Now, to give you a little bit of background about Bonhoeffer, when his brother told him not to waste his life in such a poor, feeble, boring, petty bourgeois institution such as the church, the 14-year-old Bonhoeffer replied, "If what you say is true, then I have to reform it." He was the type of person that even at a young age was willing to stand by the church in its darkest hours. And if you know anything about Bonhoeffer, he did live through one of Christianity's darkest hours, because he lived in Nazi Germany. He was a preacher in Nazi Germany. And he looked at the atrocities of Adolf Hitler. He saw a man that was not just infiltrating politics, destroying the church. He was implementing anti-Semitic doctrine into the church. He saw a man that was destroying society itself, abusing people, killing people, destroying the church, politics. And he couldn't just stand by and not do anything. He felt that this was such a great contradiction of God's commandments that he had to at least do something to get their attention, to try and change their mind. So, well, what did he do first? Well, Bonhoeffer created a reformed church in Nazi Germany. You can imagine that went over very well. It didn't actually go over very well. The Nazis didn't like it at all. He sort of got the hint that, you know, they didn't like it and he might be killed if he did anything else. So they shut it down. They told him, you know, you don't want to protest. We're Nazis. We don't like that type of thing. Bonhoeffer was quickly realizing he didn't have that many options. But he also realized he couldn't just stand by. And so he didn't ask, how can I be a good person? What would a good Christian do in this situation? He asked a much harder question. He asked, what is God's will? Essentially, he asked, what would Jesus do? And he came to the surprising conclusion that he had to assassinate Adolf Hitler, and he tried. While many Christians, hopefully most of you in this room, can understand that he was a very brave man and can applaud him for his courage, there are some Christians, some people who would disagree with his decision to react using physical intervention against his oppressor. Because Christ says, do not resist an evil person. If someone were to strike you on the right cheek, turn him the other also. Okay, well, if you were looking at that one passage, it would appear that maybe Christians should be pacifist almost, that we should always turn the other cheek. But that's simply not true, because when you're looking at a greater discourse of God, you can't look at the one passage. You see, if you study other parts of Scripture, that sometimes God sends his people to war, that sometimes God allows violence. There's not just one way that God responds to every situation. Jesus himself doesn't react the same way in every single situation. For example, when he went to the temple in Jerusalem and saw that a marketplace had been set up, which was a contradiction of his father's commandments, we don't remember the story being that Jesus stood outside with a sign that said, hey, you know, my dad says that's probably not a good idea. You know, he didn't even give him a sermon. He didn't stand outside and preach to them. He ran inside the temple. He flipped over the tables and he told the money changers that they had to get out. You know, some people find that to be almost out of character for Jesus, but it's actually not. I mean, if you think about it, these money changers, they were in a temple trying to make money. I mean, they weren't going to leave if a man stood outside and said it was wrong. It's just not the way the world works. And so Jesus was responding proportionately in this situation, because he knew they couldn't just stay in there. They couldn't just have the market in the temple. It was wrong. So he did what he did to get them out. He responded proportionately. And I think what it comes down to is that Christians should ask themselves, as cliche as it sounds in modern churches, it's something that we see on wristbands and on VBS things, is we should ask the question, what would Jesus do? What would Jesus do? And it's a harder question than we often think. You know, I think that sometimes Christians, we don't always understand, what would Jesus do? Well, Jesus went to great lengths, and sometimes we don't understand the lengths that a person would have to go to actually do what Jesus did, to actually do what Bonhoeffer did, to do what Martin Luther King Jr. did. Because if you know anything about these men, about their lives, they got hit pretty hard, but they stood by their beliefs. And that's what we need to look at, standing by your beliefs, even in the most dark situations. Going back to Jean Valjean, there's a part in the story when he's trying to help a young girl. He's promised her mother that he's going to take care of her, that he needs to go and help her. Now, this is justice. He has to go and help this young girl, be loving and kind. But on his way there, he runs in to Javert, of all people. He wants him to go back to prison. Well, 19 years in prison, you probably don't want to go back there. And he didn't really appreciate that Javert showed up. So he picked up a chair, and he threatened to hit his enemy, and then to escape. But he stopped. He thought about it for a second. You know, he paused. He put the chair down. And he didn't strike Javert. Now, he didn't go with him. No, he walked out of the situation, and he went to go help the young girl. But he responded proportionately in the situation. He responded proportionately and went to go do justice. Micah 6:8 calls us to do justice. As Christians, we can be like Jean Valjean, Bonhoeffer, Martin Luther King Jr. These are big names. And sometimes it seems like it's too hard. But in reality, we need to realize as Christians, we have that power, that voice to stand by our beliefs. And it's not just something that we should think about. It's something that God calls us to do, to stand by our beliefs, even in the darkest situations. So as Christians, we can use our voice. We can respond. We can be just. Thank you.